Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Good evening and thanks for your company on Sports Day on this Friday night. Massive show coming your way. We'll talk some cricket with our great mate Bharat Sundaresan shortly. India fighting on today, but they keep losing troops. Another injury today to a fast bowler. They did pretty well considering there wasn't too much in the pitch. The Aussie shot selection, though, is another story. But probably the Aussies in a good position at the end of day one, despite maybe could have been a little bit further ahead. Want your calls and your thoughts on the day's cricket on 9221 882. There was some dubious shot selection on the way through. Jason Berendorf from the Scorchers is going to join us. Tom Jervis, the new Perth Wildcats big man who comes back to the Cats, will join us as well. We'll talk about Bernard Tomic a little later with Brett Phillips with a tennis update, and talk NFL with Ben Graham, as well as Glenn Jakovich's AFL season previews down to the last two teams in Brisbane and Port Adelaide. That's all coming up here on Sports Day. $50 Bottle-O voucher up for grabs. Got to love your local at the Bottle-O. Glenn Jakovich, it's a very good evening to you.
Good evening, Adam. Great to be on the program. It's a big day in sport. Been a big week, and leading in, obviously, to the NFL finals, which we're going to talk about with Ben Graham later. But an interesting topic that I might want to talk to our listeners, 9221 882. I'm a traditionalist. I don't want to change too much of the aesthetics of the AFL, but I think it's time that we look at a wild card weekend, because I watched it last weekend in the NFL, and it was exciting. And it's just to get rid of that dead rubber, round 22 or round 23, which is going to be this year, where, you know, sides pull players out and general soreness has got them, and it's a nothing round. So it'd be very interesting to hear what our listeners think, but I'm in favour of it.
Okay, who else likes it? 9221 882, the phone number. You can put yourself in the running for that $50 Bottle-O voucher. A hot topic tonight, thanks to Repco, the expert car air conditioning service you can rely on. Visit repcoservice.com. NFL have a wild card system. I don't actually understand exactly how it works over there. It is quite different to what I think you're proposing, Jacko, and what's been floated a few times, but it's more the question is, are we ready for it now? It's been talked about a little bit over the last couple of years, but would you like to see it introduced now? 9221 882. I reckon they missed a trick by not having it last year in the shortened season, in the COVID-affected season. So basically the scenario being that you've got your top six who would be locked in, so that you qualify. If you finish in the top six, you are in the finals, and then the wild card gets played out in two games, two wild card spots left up, which would take up position 7 and 8 on the ladder. So you get 7 playing 10th. Yep. And 8 playing 9th as a wild card week.
Just for our listeners, the way the NFL runs, just in a snapshot, sides get off to a good, really good start, and then they lose 3 or 4 games in the middle of the year. Let's make point that the NFL season is only a 17-week season. So 4 games, that's like 6 or 7 in the AFL. And then you come good at the end and you just miss out, and, you know, 9th and 10th is just as good as 7th of 8th, but they had a few injuries. So it just keeps the door ajar open, and it makes it exciting. You shuffle your fixtures to make it a little bit more exciting towards that back end. So I just think the 7th and 8th position in the top 8 has really been pretty boring in the last couple of years, apart from, obviously, the Bulldogs. So that was, I won't take that away from them. That was a monumental effort. But since it came in 1994, the top 8 system, it really, everyone by that time of the year think, you know, there's too many teams in the 8, they're not good enough. So if they're still going to have the finals weekend and it's going to generate revenue, let's spice those two games up. Don't just hand it to 7th and 8th. Let them earn it and give 9th and 10th an opportunity. And there was a couple of years ago, even both our teams here with West Coast and I think Freo had a bit of a run and they just missed out on the finals and they were promising they're building. That was like St Kilda. And they could bring that momentum and cause a little bit of disruption in the top 8, top 6, even maybe the top 4. So I think that it needs to be looked at seriously, because I just think what it is now, it's pretty mundane, that 7th and 8th spot.
And I just don't think we need that bye weekend too much.
Well, the bye weekend is, they do a lot of the AFL awards, and there's a few gaps to fill in there, the All-Australian, the NAB Rising Star and so forth. You can still continue to do that and maybe change them and incorporate them in the game or something. But that last round beforehand, they pull players out. They and it's round 22 is a non-fixture. First, if you finished on top of the ladder by two games, you're not going to go to Brisbane if it's Frio. Why would you travel and take, you know, Nat Fyfe over there when you can freshen him up and get him ready for round one? So, and we know there's a history of that that's been, it's manipulated the draw and in best preparation, and you would do that because you've got a chance to win a premiership.
If you're still going to have the bye weekend, that's what, well, I don't think it should be a bye weekend. I think it should be wild card weekend. And if you look back at the ladder from last year, so seventh is the Western Bulldogs, who and St Kilda only just got sixth position over the top of them on percentage. It was 10%, so I guess that's a bit of a difference, but they're on the same amount of points, so that would have made it interesting in the last round. Seventh were the Bulldogs, would then have played the GWS Giants, who were the grand finalists from the year before,
so
with a last-ditch attempt to get back into the finals, which would have been interesting. And Collingwood take on Melbourne, which would have been a fantastic fixture.
With, so, blockbuster at the MCG, you're going to get 90,000 there. Yeah, so from a revenue point of view, it's going to be massive. One of them played at the MCG, and the other one, obviously, whoever's got the home ground advantage.
But more importantly, it would have kept teams like Carlton, Fremantle, and even Essendon, who finished a game back from the Giants in 10th, to keep going for just a little bit longer
into the year. Yeah, because there is a habit amongst the clubs when you're in that position like Essendon, Fremantle, Hawthorn, come round 18, 19, even earlier, they send them for postseason operations in preparation for the following year because they've already wiped the year. Now, that's all well and good. If that athlete needs to get surgery, needs to get surgery, but then your team's still alive for a chance to play in a wild card playoff game and play finals. And that means more revenue. There could be incentive bases. You know that all clubs want to get their sponsors on primetime TV. So it's a massive incentive for the clubs, but it keeps the competition healthy and alive, and it's intriguing.
Sounds good to me. 9221 882. What do you think out there, listeners? Our hot topic, thanks to Repco. You'll be blown away with car air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. Book at repcoservice.com. The reason we're talking about this is we're going to be talking some NFL a little bit later on in the program with Ben Graham, who, of course, was a star here in the AFL and then went across there to America and made his name as a punter too, became the first Aussie ever to play in a Super Bowl. 9221 882. The number. We'll come back. We'll talk the rest of the news in sport today and talk cricket and wrap up the first day's play up there at the Gabba. This is Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day. Adam Papalia and Glenn Jakovich with you. I'll get to Bharat Sundaration in just a moment, but right now let's get a bushfire update with Ann Naylor.
A bushfire emergency warning is in place for the Shire of York in parts of Daliac and St Ronan's. People bounded by 13 Mile Brook, Helena Road, Ashworth Road, Mokine Road, Hammersley Siding Road and Womban Nature Reserve are in danger and need to act immediately to survive. There is a threat to lives and homes. Homes on Ashworth Road and Great Southern Highway are under threat by fire now. The fire started near the intersection of Great Southern Highway and Ashworth Road in Daliac. It's moving slowly in a northwesterly direction and is out of control and unpredictable. Burning embers are likely to be blown around your home. Great Southern Highway is closed between Yarra Road and Cut Hill Road. About 150 firefighters are on the scene. Currently, over 700 hectares have been burnt. There are power outages in the area. A bushfire watch and act is also in place for people to the west of the emergency warning area. For more information, head to emergency.wa.gov.au.
Thanks very much, Anne. And there with a bushfire update. Hopefully everybody is staying safe. We'll have more updates throughout the program. Well, right now, let's get to a cricket update. Thanks to Macca's. Spend $10 at Macca's for your chance to win $10,000 in Macca's Summer Cash Giveaway. And a good friend of the program is Bharat Sundaration, who is covering the Gabba Test for CricBuzz, and he joins us on the line now. Bharat, how do you sum up the day? The Aussies 5 for 274. Probably could have had a few more runs on the board except for some rash shots, but especially after India picked up some early wickets, it could have gone a different way.
Evening, guys. Yeah, it was a bizarre day's cricket. Like, just looking at the bowling attack that India had. Some experience of four test matches across five bowlers. It's unheard of. I mean, you can see something like this happen with the new teams, maybe Bangladesh in their early days or Zimbabwe in their early days. But this is an India team in an India-Australia series. So when you look at it that way, and the fact that Australia won the toss, elected to bat, and the fact that they were in a great position with Manas Labuschagne and Matthew Wade were batting, 5 for 270 odd, I'm sure they're slightly displeased with it. They could so easily have been 3 for 320 if that partnership had flourished and really batted India at this, really depleted India out of the game. So they've still left India in with a little shout, though I still think Australia are quite on top in this game already.
Bharat, the wicket was dry and quick for day one, very unlike the Gabba pitch.
Yeah, Manas Labuschagne, I think, summed it up beautifully. He said that it felt like a 2.5 day pitch, like a day three pitch, which is when the Gabba is at its quickest, the ball's coming on. And we've seen some massive cracks in the middle of the pitch, which a lot of locals, including Alan Border, have said he's never seen before. I guess this is not very often we get to see test match cricket at the Gabba in January. It happened, 2 years ago, that most recently, but not for a long time before that. So it was an interesting pitch. It looked really, really good for batting more than anything. But it is very tough to judge this pitch based on the Indian attack purely because of the severe lack of experience. Even though I thought they battled pretty well, especially after losing one out of that mix as well.
Bharat, the Indian team have been incredible and one of the toughest, I think you've said, the toughest Indian team to tour here in Australia. But the injury crisis that is going on, is it the worst that you can remember or that you've seen? And then to lose Saini today as well, and another fast bowler down, it's incredibly tough for the bowling lineup.
Well, see, we in India believe a lot in evil forces and jinxes and, you know, bad omens. And it seriously seems like a mixture of all of that has hit this Indian team. Because it just can't be happening, right? He lost Mohammad Shami, all right, to a blow to his arm. But Umesh Yadav goes home. Ishan Sharma and Bhuvneshwar Kumar didn't even make it. And then the spate of injuries in the last game. But then to have Bumrah and Ashwin, your two senior most bowlers, who've been in top form, missing out. And Ashwin, I think they were sweating over his fitness even till today morning. And the fact that they have gone in with five bowlers and the fact that Washington Sundar is playing, despite having been more or less a white ball spinner in the last 2-3 years, is purely based on the fact that they didn't have Ashwin, which meant that they had to go in with five bowlers and someone who could bat a little or risk having a tail which starts at seven. So, yeah, they've still shown a lot of fight. I thought, losing Saini, who just seemed to be getting warmed up to test cricket after a poor start in Sydney, was a big loss. And that too, I mean, look at the moment you lost him to injury, the moment Manas Labuschagne was dropped. So that moment was just like, you know, in two ways, the worst moment of the day for India. But they've still shown some spirit. They've still shown a lot of fight. Nobody expected Washington Sundar to bowl as tightly as he did. And, well, he got the wicket of Steve Smith as well.
Brad, how do they approach day two tomorrow? Because it's pretty pivotal for India to dominate tomorrow's state of play.
Oh, yeah, I think tomorrow, the first half hour or so, because Cam Green looks really set and Tim Payne looks hungry. He's got that look in his eye and he has so much to prove in this game after all that happened in Sydney. And he seems to have come out with the determination to not just be out there, but to score runs. So he's got to start as well. So the first half hour will be really crucial. Saini looks to be in bad shape, but Shardul Thakur was holding his hamstring towards the end of the day. India really cannot afford to lose another bowler overnight. So you used to say, I mean, they'll all sleep uneasy tonight. But if they don't make a breakthrough or a couple of breakthroughs in the first half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe, just maybe for once, the fight might just go out of the system for India, because that's only that much you can do with whatever is left. And then it'll just really come down to the top four who've been in very good form and how they tackle this high-class Aussie attack, not to forget Nathan Lyon in this 100th test.
Brad, there's been some reports coming through about some more abuse directed at Indian players in Siraj again today. What are you hearing?
Oh, this is the first time hearing of it, sorry. But, like, yeah, that's terrible. I had no idea. Oh, if it's happened, then I would be really shocked. And, yeah, I mean, did you hear it just now? It's just shocking.
Just seeing some stuff come through on social media about potentially some things being said in the crowd. Not sure as to how serious it actually is, but something I'm sure that we'll all follow up on over the next day or two. But, I mean, we'd be appalled if it is anything as strong as what was suggested there at the SCG. Brett, so tomorrow morning, as we said, it's going to be a crucial first session. The drop catches today, though, for India, Rahane's in particular, who's had such a good series. You think if you get Labuschagne at 37, how different the day may have looked?
It would have been 4 for 94, Australia. And you have Wade and Green in the middle, and you're on top. It was just the worst time. I mean, there's never a bad time or a good time to drop a catch, but just, like, couldn't have asked for a worse time. Manas Labuschagne has had that kind of summer, starting from his first ever Shield innings. I remember watching him in Adelaide against Tasmania, where he was dropped three times before he reached 40. So it's been that kind of summer, but he's really cashed in after being dropped. And there was also that other crucial drop just before the second new ball was taken, when Cameron Green hit the ball straight back at Shardul Thakur. Even at that point, you get them 6 for 250-odd with the second new ball. With just the tail end with Tim Payne, you never know, maybe they would have made inroads. But it's been the story of this series. Whoever has dropped catches, things haven't gone well for them. If you look at the first test, India dropped catches, they lost. Second test, Australia dropped catches, they lost. Third test, both teams dropped catches, so obviously nobody won. So it's a bad start in that sense. But yeah, it could. That's the thing. Despite playing with this playing 11, the fact that India have not let Australia get away and, in fact, had opportunities to get on top just tells you even more about the fight in this team.
Thanks so much for your time, Bharat. Really appreciate chatting to you, mate. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bharat.
Bharat Sandaration there. And just back on that story that's been posted through, there's some footage circulating on social media. I think it's to the same extent as what was potentially happening in Sydney. But after what's happened in Sydney, obviously some members of the public have taken to calling out at the cricket repeatedly.
Is it over-analysed or is it serious enough to, given what's happened on the back of Sydney? I mean, you are allowed to go to a sporting event and cheer for your team, and you know, if you want to put the opposition off, as long as it's above board.
Well, that's where the grey line, I guess, moves, or the line moves quite a bit. We'll see what comes of it. We still haven't heard exactly what's come out of the one at the SCG.
Look, at the end of the day, either. When you go to a sporting venue, there's a code of conduct how to behave, providing that's been upheld.
But you think on the back of everything that's happened in the last test, we should just be leaving it alone?
You're right in saying that.
Common sense would say that.
But common sense would say that, but let's get the facts. I think that it's a trail of what's happened after Sydney, and it creates headlines, and it's great for social media, and then it just gets blown out. This is now becoming more dominant than the first day of play, which there's so many stories to talk about. Our two openers, there's an issue there for the Australian camp. Obviously, Labuschagne's century was fantastic. India in crisis, not in crisis, their bowling stocks are in crisis with the injuries, but they're showing so much resilience. I reckon there's a story in that. This is probably the most resilient Indian side that's ever toured Australia. So it's been a great series. Let's not mar it by someone saying a few comments over the fence, if it is of a racial discrimination.
Or even just of a serious nature. Or repeated.
Of a serious nature, then get rid of them. You know, you get rid of them and you ban them from that that sporting complex for life. That will determine and set a precedent. But if it's a little bit of banter or whatever about the cricket and about the state of play, you drop the catch, don't drop another one, you know, you got lolly fingers, you know, things like that. Well, that's part of sport, you know. It's part of going and rooting for your team and the crowd and cheering for them. So, let's not overcook this, because it's it's not covering what we were here for, and that's the first day of play.
9221 882 is the phone number here on Sports. That was a cricket update there with Bharat. Thanks to Macca's. Spend $10 or more at Macca's today for your chance to win $10,000 in Macca's Summer Cash Giveaway. 10 winners a day. Make sure you go and get involved in that. 9221 882. Your thoughts on the cricket, particularly our openers. What is the solution? We just cannot seem to find the right pair that make runs consistently together as a good combination. And also thoughts on a potential wild card on the back of us, or the fact that we're about to talk NFL, the back of the wild card weekend that's been in the NFL, and we're going to talk NFL with Ben Graham. Your thoughts on bringing a wild card round into the AFL for this season? 9221 882. This is Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Thanks so much for your company here on Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovic with you. To your calls in just a moment. News headlines, thanks to Car Sales, number one for cars, is pretty much the live sport that is going on at the moment. The Strikers in a fair bit of trouble, chasing 180, 9.5 overs in. The Strikers 3 for 45. And it was Fletcher smashing them around. Was it 89 or 49 that he got before Jacko?
And a 6 off the last ball. So the Strikers, they're up to 12 runs and over. So it's going to be pretty hard work from here on in.
News headlines for Car Sales. Car Sales every 30 seconds on Car Sales. We'll do our season preview of Brisbane Lions in just a moment. But to your calls, Alan's in Ellenbrook. Hi, Alan. We got you there, Alan?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, mate. Fire away. Got you now.
Yeah, sorry. Before I talk about my point with the AFL wildcard, I just want to mention a quick fact. Ben Graham played for the Cardinals, but to get into the Super Bowl had to play against the Philadelphia Eagles, where Sav Rocker was playing as a punter. So either way, we were going to get our first going to get our first Australian playing in a Super Bowl. But with regards to the wildcard, look, I think we already support mediocrity enough, and I just I think if you're not good enough to make the eight, I mean, to be honest, if you're not good enough to make the six, I don't think you deserve to be there on the final day. And I think we're just trying to prop up with a bit of money and a bit of support for us the viewers. But at the end of the day, if you're not, it's just, we're just really just pandering to the teams that aren't good enough and just don't recruit well or don't train well. I mean, we've seen so many players go from one team where they struggle, go to a team with a good coach like Clarkson, and you know, they just do absolutely gangbusters. And I just think we're just going to keep rewarding the lower common denominator rather than trying to get those teams up to a level that we want to see. And we did it with Subiaco as well. You know, we penalised them instead of bringing the waffle clubs up to their level. We penalised Subiaco so that everybody, they go down to everybody else's. And we just need to start looking at going, let's make things better, not worse, or not equal. It's never going to be equal, but let's try bring everybody's level up rather than bring the best down.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate your call. Jacko?
Yeah, he raises some valid points there, like from the waffle point of view. Subiaco had got penalised because they're elite in a lot of areas, but they had the resources. But I just like it when it's round 15, 16, and you got 12th to 7th, all separated by 2 points, 4 points, and a bit of percentage. It gets exciting. To Alan, the point is that the last couple of rounds, in particular that last round, coaches are pulling players away from, because they've got a dead rubber. They're secured a top six or top four or top two. We're going to try and make
or
that.
Or they've sent people for surgery.
They've sent people for surgery. And that compromises the viewer, the punter that goes. You don't want to compromise game of football.
Dom's in success. Hi, Dom.
G'day, boys. How are you?
Hey, Dom.
I just wanted to make 2 points. The first one is, I think, I've never seen a team, I'm a cricket tragic and I've watched it all my life, I've never seen a team decimated by injury like what India have done. And I think the way that they have fought and what shows you is the depth in their fast bowling is pretty scary, I think, for the pitch, because they're without the best batsmen in the world, they're without their five best bowlers, and Australia still can't get on top of them. I think Australia need to have a really good hard look at themselves at exactly how good they are, because this team should have been flogged today. They batted poorly. I think David Warner's lost his eye. He's never had the best technique in the world. I think he's done, but Pekoski's definitely good. But I just think India, I think they deserve so much praise and credit for what they've done in Australia. this tour, considering what they've copped off the field as well. It's just phenomenal how they've fronted up, and they're putting us to the sword big time. And I think we need to have a really good look at what we've got. The best bowling attack in the world. We can't seem to bowl them out without Kohli, and I just think they've done phenomenally well, and I reckon that's where the credit needs to go.
Good call.
Basically.
Good call, Dom. Really like your points there. And I think on the back of the Adelaide, when they were all bowled out in the second innings for 36, we thought, well, everyone's saying 4-0, whitewash. And then they come back on the most famous test, the Boxing Day test, with the biggest pressure and the biggest eyes around the world. And they dominated. And they've been resilient. I've really enjoyed watching India perform. And under adversity, there's still a chance. And the test is still alive, albeit Australia should go on from here. But day two tomorrow will be very interesting.
It certainly will. Glenn Jakovich, let's get into your pre-season prediction for the Brisbane Lions.
Okay, they finished second last year, 14 wins and 3 losses. They were third for scoring and 6th for defence. They won a final. They went out in straight sets the year before, but they won a final, and they won it against the eventual winner, Richmond, in the qualifying final. Their prelim obviously wasn't a very good one, but I think going into pre-season, they'd be, you know, pinching themselves. They missed an opportunity, but full of confidence knowing they can beat the best of the best in a final, and they beat Richmond. Let's remember that. Their fixtures are Sydney Swans at the Gabba first, they got Geelong away, Pies at the Gabba, Bulldogs at Marvel, Essendon at the Gabba, and then Carlton at Marvel. So they got some tricky games there. They want to really get off to a good start. The Gabba is going to be a fortress for them. They'll dominate there. But their midfield, Lachie Neale, reigning Brownlow medalist, Jared Berry, Hugh McLuggage, and Jared Lyons and Mitch Robertson, they step up now to the next level. Dane Zorko has been very good, but see how much more they can get out of him. You've got their defence is rock solid. I mean, Harris Andrews, All-Australian. Daniel Rich is playing that really good role, sweeping role off the halfback. Darcy Gardner's locked down. I like Brandon Starcevic. I reckon he's just a beast of a competitor. WA boy, we've got Marcus Adams. And then you throw in Callum Archie, another Western Australian, and Grant Birchall. Can he hold up? I've got them finishing. I like their, obviously, their big ends is Joe Danaher and their forward line. His connection with Eric Hipwood, I'm waiting for Eric Hipwood to take the season by storm. He can kick 50, 60 goals without a doubt. He's quick. He reads the ball well. Just got to work on his set shot kicking and just his consistency. I'd like to see him put on 5 or 6 kilos and be a real brute up forward. If he gets a combination with Joe Danaher early, they're going to be scary, because you've got Charlie Cameron, Cam Rayner. He's a bull and he's ready to take the competition and rip it apart. And then Lincoln McCarthy. So, Oscar McInerney is their ruckman with Archie Smith. Bit light there, but watch out for Connor Balladin. He was an academy product, very, very good. Tom Joyce and Devin Robertson, two Western Australians, like to see them get an opportunity. I reckon they can go the next step. I reckon they can make a grand final now. I think they'll play top four. Their home ground advantage is strong. Their depth is really, really good, and their A-grade players are playing to that level. So Lachie Neale, Brownlow medalist last year, he's leading the way. Joe Danaher, I got them playing in the grand final in season 2021.
They play such an exciting brand of footy, yeah. Don't they, the Brisbane Lions? Yeah, as you said, if they're young players, that sort of middle bracket that they're starting to get into can take a big leap, they're going to be scary good, I think.
Yeah, and I like Jared Berry and Hugh McLuggage. They're into their fourth, fifth year now. Cam Rayner, like I said, he's a bull. There's a lot of upside. Callum Archie, they just need a couple of these younger players that have played 30 or 40 really take the next step. Eric Hipwood is the one for me. If he can combine well with Joe Danaher, they're going to be very formidable. And, you know, it's one kick out of the Gabba Square. Those two are going to mark it. It's a goal.
So a grand final awaits the Brisbane Lions in 2021, according to Glenn Jakovich. We will finish with a final team just after 7 o'clock. Let's get a bushfire update now, though, with Anne Naylor.
Thank you. A bushfire emergency warning has been downgraded to a watch and act for the Shire of York in parts of Daliac and St Ronan's. The alert's in place for people bounded by Helena Road, Ashworth Road, Mokine Road, Hammersley Siding Road and Wombin Road, as well as Boyacuddy Road. There's a possible threat to lives and homes as the fire is still not contained and it's still out of control. If you're not prepared or you plan to leave, leave now if the way is clear. The fire started near the intersection of Great Southern Highway and Ashworth Road in Dalyak. It's moving slowly in a northwesterly direction. Burning embers are likely to be blown around your home. Great Southern Highway is closed between Yarra Road and Cuthill Road. About 150 firefighters are on the scene. Currently, over 700 hectares have been burnt. There are also power outages in the area. For more information, head to emergency.wa.gov.au.
Thanks very much, Anne and Naylor there with a bushfire update. We'll keep you up to date right here on 6PR, as always, with any developments. 9221882 is the phone number. In the cricket, the Strikers are 5 for 55, so in all sorts of trouble is Jason Gillespie's team. They need 125 or 52. That is not going to happen, even though I'm going in the early crow. That's not going to happen. And I'll give you an update in the basketball shortly as well. Jason Berendorf from the Perth Scorchers. He's coming up next here on Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Adam Papalia and Glenn Jakovich with you this evening. And we've been following closely the dramatic turnaround in form the Perth Scorchers have undergone over the last five matches. They're aiming to make it six in a row when they take on the Sydney Sixers tomorrow. They're over there in Canberra after their great stint at home. And joining us now is in-form bowler in Jason Berendorf. Jason, thanks very much for your time.
No worries, perhaps. It's always great to chat.
Yeah, great to have a chat to you. How are things over there in Canberra?
Yeah, very good, mate. We flew in yesterday and had an afternoon-evening training session today. So it's been nice to get back into the swing of things, get moving again. A few boys a bit stiff after the flight. For some reason, just felt like it took forever to get over here from Perth yesterday. But it's all going well, mate. We had a good session and, can't wait for tomorrow night again.
Jason, Glenn Jakovich, thanks for joining us on the program. Now that you are in Canberra, are there training protocols, strict ones that you have to abide by whilst you've now entered into the ACT?
Yeah, so it's been quite similar to what we've had last time we were here as well. Training times are very specific, so it's quite a small window, generally about a maximum sort of three-hour session. You've got to get in, got to get out. They're pretty tight on that, so... Yeah, basically that's the main thing. So we have to wear masks generally to the ground and from the ground. Once we're training, obviously that's okay. We do what we need to do. But yeah, the biggest one is sort of time limits, which can be hard at times because guys want to get extra prep done or whatever it might be. But sometimes you sort of run out of time a little bit.
A little bit disappointed to have to jump back on a plane, given how well you're playing at Optus Stadium.
Yeah, that's an understatement, perhaps. So, yeah, we love playing in person. But in saying that, we haven't had the greatest success over the period of time that we've played at Optus Stadium. So it was amazing to play at home and win four in a row. That's given us so much confidence. We started playing some really good cricket as a team. Everyone's contributing. And that's a really positive thing, that it's a team effort and that everyone's doing their role in the team, and we can't ask for much more than that.
Come on, mate. Everyone's talking about the batsmen the other night, but it's been the bowling department that's been the key to victory for the Scorchers. You've really been on fire you and Jai Richardson taking early wickets and restricting teams to some pretty low totals.
Yeah, you're right, mate. We are pretty good as a bowling group, aren't we? It's good fun, mate. And someone actually commented to me the other day, it almost seems a little bit like Scorchers of old. So the guys are restricting the total and doing that sort of thing that like we've been doing in the past. So it's a fun group to be a part of. We've played generally, a lot of us have played a lot of cricket together now. You're right. We've been able to take wickets in the power play, which puts the other team on the back foot. And then we've got class bowlers through the middle. Andrew Tai does what he does, mate. He's the mystery king. He bowls every different ball under the sun and takes wickets for fun. You got Farwood Ahmed that, again, does a great job through the middle for us. And Aaron Hardy, who we knew was going to be a really impact player for us, but not too many people probably would have known about Hards and what he can do. But he's been vital for us through the middle as well in particular. So, we had Mitch up and running and unfortunately don't have that option at the moment and potentially not for the rest of the tournament. But we've still got a lot of bowlers and a lot of confidence in that group, that's for sure.
Jason, the other night at the Optus Stadium against the Hurricanes, it was a gettable target, but I felt it was really important now that you're on the away leg that your openers, Roy and Livingston, got off to a really, really strong start and got amongst the runs.
Yeah, it is. And that was the thing. So the boys have been hungry for runs and It's something that they've worked a lot on in the Nets. I think Jay Roy might have said the other day about Livy. It's great to see him get some runs because he has been putting in so much work in the Nets. He's been really trying to craft it and find the best way for him to go about it and make a really big impact for us. So now that those two have got that little bit of confidence, they both made 50 in the last game, and hopefully that's just a little stepping stone for them to go, yep, we're going to drive it, keep driving it forward. So through the power play, they'll take it on. They'll get us 30 or 40 maybe in the power play, get us off to a really strong start, and then we can launch from there.
You just played the Sydney Sixers. You kept them under 197. You bowled them all out in 16.4 overs. So you're going to expect a more fired up opposition this time.
Yeah, no doubt. And they're a class act. So I'm pretty sure they're still sitting on top of the table, and they won the comp last year. So they're an exceptional team. And that's different conditions at Monaco completely. We've been watching the last couple of games that were played there, and the wicket looks quite tired, I guess. Probably spin might play a big part, and those sort of things. So very different conditions to Optus Stadium. But again, another challenge, and we'll certainly be right up for it.
You got Josh Phillippe pretty cheaply last time at the top of the innings. Given you know him pretty well, do you flick him a text or something after the game?
No, I caught up with him for dinner, though.
You could sledge him in person then?
Yeah, no, exactly right, because now we're all in the hub over here in Canberra, so we sort of see each other around a bit. So, it's always nice, another WA boy, and he's been having a great tournament. So, yeah, for us to get him out early, that's going to be another big key moment for us in the game tomorrow. So hopefully we can continue to do that. Again, take wickets in the power play and get us off to a really strong start.
You mentioned Mitch Marsh before. How are his spirits given his injury? Just back from injury, hit form and unfortunately injured again.
Yeah, no doubt Mitch is a bit disappointed, frustrating, and I know all too well about injuries, unfortunately. So, it's never nice. But to his credit, he flew over with us, and he's done a fair bit of rehab while we were training today. And Mitch is one of the best guys to have around the group at any time. He's a real upbeat, lively character, and life of the party sort of bloke, as you know. So he's always great to have around, and we'll definitely miss him in the next couple of games, whatever it might be, but we'll certainly welcome him with open arms when he's ready to come back for us.
With everything that you've been through with your injuries, have you been surprised as to how well you've actually bowled when you've come back? And you must be enjoying it out there after missing so much cricket.
Yeah, I really am now. It's still, definitely for the early part of the tournament was a bit of a kind of feeling my way a little bit, having jumped from playing a bit of club cricket to then jumping straight into the Big Bash. So it's the intensity goes up, and I guess they say the big lights come on and all the pressure comes on a little bit as well. So it's been really nice to string a few games together, and I'm just starting to feel a bit more confident in all the changes that I've made. So a little bit here and there with my action, a little bit in my run-up, all those sorts of things that just take a little bit of time, and I'm hopefully starting to just reap some rewards of the work I've been putting in, and it's starting to click a bit better now.
Jason, give us an update on Colin Munro. Will he play?
I reckon he will, yeah. So he trained really strongly today. And chatting to Munners himself, I think he'd nearly have to cut his leg off this time for him to not play. So he's here to play, and obviously, as we've seen, 350s in a row at Optus, huge, huge player for us. Really welcome him back, and hopefully he's back for tomorrow.
Well, Jason, good luck. We hope you make it six in a row, and really appreciate you giving some time on Sports Day.
No worries, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason.
Well, welcome back to Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovich with you this evening. And Jacko, let's get into a tennis update. Thanks to Sunblessed Sunscreens, a sunscreen designed specifically for cricket, golf, tennis and lawn bowls at sunblessedsunscreens.com.au. Go and check it out. And joining us, as he always does, for our tennis updates, and I reckon he's been a busy man covering all things tennis because there's a lot going on, is Brett Phillips, who joins us on the line now. Brett, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure, Adam. Glenn, nice to speak to you guys.
Great to chat to you. We'll get into the quarantine and about the players arriving shortly. But let's kick it off with the Australian Open qualifiers. Bernard Tomic is through. He's qualified for another Australian Open. But first of all, let's just have a little bit of a listen to what Bernard Tomic had to say.
Many high things that can go wrong, and I'm risking my life, and I'm playing, and I'm competing. Well, of course, I want to get there. I would be hanging the rackets up. I don't need to play tennis again. I've got enough money. So why are you asking me this question? Like, don't ask questions like that.
So Bernard Tomic, just you want to back him in. You want to support him, but he makes it tough, I reckon. BP.
Yeah, well, he's naturally on the defensive these days, Adam. Anytime he's approached by the press, he's already got his back up and he's sitting sideways in his chair, and he's got a bit to, certainly spit out. He's had a fascinating life, hasn't he, and a fascinating journey. I think the first time I saw him in the juniors at Wimbledon, the first time I went many, many years ago, and you knew he was a pretty special talent. He was unique and he could do a lot of things on the tennis court that, you know, half the players out there couldn't. And that's what got him to world number 17, absolute natural, brilliant talent. But unfortunately, the circus around him, and then probably just not enough commitment to go the next step. He's tailed off all the way now outside the top 200. So he was given no favours, and nor should he have been, from Tennis Australia to get a wild card. He had to, get on a plane and go to the Middle East and win three tough matches. And look, credit to him. He had to absolutely battle to the nth degree to get through to the main draw. I mean, winning, third set tiebreakers, matches that went over 2.5 hours. So he had to grit his teeth, and he can do that. We've seen him put in some pretty lame efforts. That's a YouTube channel all to itself across the years. But when he does grit his teeth, I mean, he can compete. And he says he doesn't need the money, but I mean, he's 27, 28 now, Bernard. I mean, there's no plan B. I mean, there's never been another vocation. It's been tennis from, as soon as he could pick up a racket, Orange Bowl champion at 14. So he'd want to extend the career out, and I don't know how many mil he's got, but maybe increase that just a little bit so that he, he can sit there in his mid-30s and at least have something behind him. And it'd be a shame for him just to fall away totally. So you just hope anyone with natural talents maybe got one more surge, but I don't think that's necessarily going to win the fans over here for quite a while.
Brett, Glenn Jakovich, thanks for joining us on the program. Staying with Bernard, like you said, he's 27. He was an unbelievable talent as a junior. Is there hope for him to get back in the top 20, 17th in the world once upon a time? But what's he put in place? Does he have a coach? Does he really want to get back to and maximise his talent?
Jack, it's really hard to get a read on Tomic. I mean, there is no coach. The relationship with his father, I think, is a little strained, and certainly the father doesn't, now travel with him like he did. And I suppose once you get up to 27, 28 years of age, you're going to, break away. Although some players don't. They have that relationship with their father in tennis right throughout their careers, maybe more so the women than the men. But it's just hard to know, whether he's going to be able to sustain that commitment. So if he did absolutely knuckle down, there's no doubt he could get back inside the top 100 in a hurry. He'd skip past plenty of players. If he could play it at his best and keep a really good fitness base, he had, back issues, Glenn, last year, and, you could certainly put that down to years of not really putting in the work. I mean, this is a pretty brutal sport, one-on-one battle, where you've got to be physically now at an unbelievable level to compete against guys who are so hungry out there to climb the tennis ladder. So his natural talent, unfortunately, is not going to take him where he wants to. He's got to combine that with an absolute dedication, and I'm not sure he's really got that. So I think it's one step at a time, and let's hope he can at least, get to Melbourne now and put in some good matches. He has had some good success at the Aussie Open.
You mentioned, obviously, talent alone, but from Australia tennis point of view, there are resources there for him to access to make himself better, whether it's physically, whether it's his technique, whether it's more coaches. It's there for him to use, isn't it?
Well, it's an interesting point, Jago, because, I mean, TA, to be honest, about 2 years ago, basically wiped him. They'd had enough of him. Some lame efforts, the way he blew up at the Davis Cup. I mean, he'd actually played some really good Davis Cup matches for Australia. There was once upon a time where he and Leighton Hewitt were quite tight, and that relationship certainly fractured with Bernard's comments and some of his efforts. So, there's no real relationship there. I mean, he's on his own, and at 220 in the world, he's getting no favours. And he'll only get that support if he absolutely dedicates himself. And I think that's fair enough from a Tennis Australia perspective, and we'll just wait and see. As I say, there's no plan B. It's either it's tennis or sitting by the pool somewhere in his many his many abodes around the world.
He's not shy of making a headline, Bernard Tomic. So I think we'll be following him closely over the next couple of weeks now that he has qualified for the Australian Open. Speaking of that, the other players that are arriving in Australia now, there's been plenty of headlines about the quarantine situation, about players testing positive. Of course, Tennis Sandgren basically on social media saying that he had tested positive as he was flying to Australia. It's been watched extremely closely. What's your read on the situation?
Yeah, they've been jetting into all the big hotels overnight through today as well. There's a big police presence. There's all, you know, obviously health officials in the PPE gear. It is stringent. It is, and I'm pretty confident TA will do a really good job. Look, I was on air yesterday, Adam, when that news filtered through about Tennis Sandgren, because all along the line had been simple. You will not board a plane to Australia unless you have a negative test. Then a negative result, and then you see Tennis Sandgren board the plane. Well, hang on, what's the further detail here that hasn't been told to us? And obviously from a health point of view, because he'd had the virus back in November, he contracted it again on Monday. They looked at his medical records, deemed that he was shedding, and you can have a positive test, but you know, not be infectious. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to get into some medical jargon. I'm going to get right out of my depth here, but you know, he was deemed to be okay to fly, which probably confuses a few people. In Andy Murray's case, well, he's contracted COVID a few days ago, you know, clearly can't jump on a plane, and he's in a really awkward situation now because it looks like he's probably going to be in a race against time to get to Melbourne, because he'd want to play one of the lead-up events. He's hardly played any tennis in the last 12 months. You can't just, you know, come into an Australian Open fairly cold after maybe arriving 4 or 5 days beforehand. So I think we can probably rule Murray out, Madison Keys out. There's a couple of coaches. I know Carlos Moyan, the Dales coach, is not coming. Nicolas Massou, the Olympic gold medalist, coach of Dominic Thiem, also has contracted COVID. So, yeah, there's a lot of players here without their normal entourages, you know, fighting for a grand slam.
So the plan is obviously with them arriving now to play some of the warm-up tournaments while they're still in quarantine, but they should all be out by the time the Australian Open starts?
Yeah, so basically, you know, from last night all the way through now to about the, 29th or 30th, they will be in their hotels for 14 nights. They'll come out for 5 hours a day and train. Obviously, there's a smaller party, which has caused a little bit of controversy as well. A smaller party that's gone to Adelaide, that's the real top end. So we're talking Djokovic and the Dale team, Serena, Simona Halep, Osaka, who look like, from what's been reported, getting some extra privileges in their hotels and access to, you know, the gym and so forth. The players in Melbourne certainly aren't getting that access too. But, yeah, that's the plan. And then, obviously, to then start playing a week of lead-ups to the Australian Open. I mean, Melbourne Park is going to be set up in three zones with five tournaments all going on at the same time, ATP Cup, and then two men's, two women's separate events all in the one precinct, which will be quite remarkable. And then we get into the Aussie Open. So, yeah, logistically, I mean, hats off to TA. This is a huge thing to undertake, and you know, they'll be crossing their legs, arms and everything, just hoping it all goes pretty well.
You're based in Melbourne. What's the feedback been from the public over there? There's been some criticism, I guess, or some questions asked of the Premier and Daniel Andrews as to whether it's all of this is worth it to get the Australian Open here.
Well, the Premier yesterday, his comment that, and I don't think he'd probably like this back, Adam. I mean, he said we've got to have it because we mightn't get it back if we lose it. I mean, that's the most ridiculous statement. I mean, the Australian Open is going to stay in Melbourne for a long time. I mean, the Grand Slams are separate entities. They're their own controlling body. So they operate independently. Tennis Australia own the Australian Open and will dictate where it goes. So it's going to stay in Melbourne, the infrastructure, you know, put into Melbourne Park. So I'm not quite sure what that comment meant. That didn't go down very well with people. I think the easy response from the public is when Victorians are stranded and can't get back to Melbourne, then they see 1,200, you know, the tennis family coming in. They can't quite get their head around that. And I can absolutely see that, but they are, you know, two separate things. And, you know, there's the other side that, gee, we need to get some events and things happening. If it can be done safely, we need to add a bit of joy and a bit of excitement to people's lives. And that's what, you know, obviously live sport does. So there's lots of sides of the fence here, but you know, I'm probably biased because I love the tennis and I want it to happen, but I can understand the general public who are pretty frustrated that, you know, the general citizen can't get back to Victoria, whether it's from interstate at the moment because of the borders or overseas.
Brett, when it's finally up and running and they're playing, who's going to win the men's and who's going to win the women's?
Well, it's a pretty simple equation with the men. You always got to start with Djokovic and Nadal as the top line billing. And then, you know, Dominic Thiem, I mean, if he hadn't played Djokovic in the final last year, had him 2-1, he probably wins. So there's the three for you. And Novak, I mean, he's looking for a 9th Australian Open. So he just has home ground advantage, so to speak, at Melbourne Park. He absolutely loves Rod Laver Arena. And he's got a great, you know, hard court record against Nadal in recent years. The women's, there's the unknown of Ash Barty. I mean, we haven't seen Ash play a match in 12 months. She's actually arrived in Melbourne. She's training here. We just don't know what she's going to look like. I thought Osaka was brilliant at the back end of last year. I mean, won the US Open. I think Naomi is a big chance to make it another Australian Open title. Halep's going to be in the picture. You know, Serena trying to get there. And I'm going to stand by my line, Glenn. I don't think she's going to get to Margaret Court's record. I think it's just far too hard. 39... This women's playing group is hungry. They believe they can beat her now. They're not intimidated anymore. And I just don't think she can win 7 matches in 2 weeks.
Well, Brett, thanks so much for your time, mate. We'll chat to you much more over the next couple of weeks as we get closer and closer to the Grand Slam. Really appreciate your update tonight.
Yeah, pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brett.
Brett Phillips there. Thanks to Sunblessed Sunscreens. Go to sunblessedsunscreens.com.au, specifically designed for cricket, golf, tennis and lawn bowls. This is Sports Day, back with Glenn Jakovich's last AFL preview. Well, thanks for your time on Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovich with you. And as we were talking about on the show last night, Tom Jervis has signed with the Perth Wildcats again, another stint at the Cats, completing their roster, of course, having won 3 championships with the Wildcats. It's great to have him back, and he joins us on the line now. Tom, thanks so much for your time.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on.
Great to see you back with the Cats. How did the signature all come about that you joined back up with the team?
Yeah, a bit of a random conversation. I'm pretty sure Greg Hyatt threw my name in the hat when it all came about. But unfortunately, you know, with Majuk going down with his injury, they're looking for someone who was going to fill the role with, I guess, as least teething as possible. And the phone call was made to me, and I just kind of wanted to see where my body was at. And it turned out it wasn't in too bad of a shape, so I said, let's do it. And that was back in early December, so... Yeah, it worked out pretty well in terms of the timing, and me, I was moving back to WA anyway, so yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So had you formally or officially retired in your mind?
I've always had the itch to play again, even when I did give it away, but it just had to kind of be the right opportunity at the right time. If someone, you know, like the situation was now, someone was injured and I was in the area, then, you know, I'd put my hand up if they wanted me, so... It was more to that case. So, you know, I've always loved the game and I don't think I'll ever stop loving it. But while my legs are still good, I want to keep going.
Tom, Glenn Jakovich, thanks for joining us on the program. Obviously, the fans, the Perth Wildcats fans, will welcome you with welcome arms and happy to have you back. You've been back with the squad training. Has it changed much since you left?
No, I mean, in terms of personnel, you know, there's some new faces around, but in terms of what's expected of you and what the coaches put forth, it's all similar. And I think that's the big thing, is that I know exactly what I'm walking into. I know the offenses and defenses. So, you know, it's kind of like just fitting in and just remembering them a little bit. That'll take, you know, about a week or so to catch up on those side of things. But it's just business as usual, which is good.
What's your role and is expected to play?
Oh, look, I think it's exactly what I've done my whole career with the Cats. It's just being that big body in the middle and rebounding and running and just trying to get guys open with setting good screens. So, you know, that's been my role for the Cats ever since I first started. And, you know, that's exactly what Trev wants me to do again. And, you know, like I said, I've been successful in doing that. So hopefully I'm able to do that again for the guys.
And where's your fitness levels at, knowing that you've only just joined the group back and you're not far away from the tip-off of the season? Are you doing some extra conditioning?
Because I started in early December, I'm actually not too far off. So there's obviously you know, it is another level once you get with the team. But in terms of how I'm feeling and that, the body's feeling great. You know, it's just getting that little bit of lung capacity up you, but they can't flog you too, you know, too much too quickly. Otherwise, you know, you run the risk of getting injuries. So it's playing a bit of both sides of getting up as much as I can and running, and also, you know, making sure the body's still feeling good.
Difficult to get a lot of work in, given you've been in quarantine and self-isolation for a bit longer than most.
Yeah, so I think I'm coming on day 19 now, which is a bit of fun. But the first 14 days were at my dad's house, so I had a bit of a backyard to run around in. But now I've joined a teammate in a hotel, and it's just a two-bedroom hotel with a little lounge room and a kitchen, so there's not much place to run around in.
So you had to do the double because you travelled back from Queensland initially to move back to Perth, and then now you've linked up with the club. You're stuck in with them too now.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so it was all, when I was leaving, it was all looking good, and I was just going to join the team as per usual, but, you know, things seem to change in this environment, and you just got to roll with it. So I'm just happy I get to join the team and get on the practice court with them.
How was your time in Brisbane?
Yeah, we loved it. So we were actually in northern New South Wales, so basically on the border of Queensland and New South Wales, but spent most of our time over on the Queensland side because schooling and things like that. So, but a beautiful, lovely place. But we're also happy to be home with the family again.
And what are your hopes for this season?
Oh, look, you know, we're going for the three-peat. I don't think there's any questions about that. You know, we're not here just to have a good time and make up numbers. We want to, that's been something that the club's been pushing for many years. And, you know, we've got the opportunity to do it this year. And, you know, we've got all the guys raring to go. Everyone's on the same page. So just about putting it together come game one.
Tom, the Perth Wildcats are one of the most successful, if not the most successful, franchise in Australian sport. Set a very high standard and a high level of consistency. Just give us an insight of what's expected from a player, and how's that been able to be so consistent over a long period of time?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, the club's obviously had that direction for such a long time. You know, their reach in the community has been something to behold, especially in the basketball side of things. You know, unfortunately, with COVID, we haven't been able to get out to the schools and things like that we usually do. But I think it starts from there. It's just being respectful, you know, being respectful in the community and showing your face and what it's all about. And it comes from the top down. You know, Jack expects championships and to be respectful and to always give 100%, you know, and it just flows down. And all the leaders that were there before, you know, even I got there, they set the pathway for us to be successful in my time. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you've come into the club, you pick it up within the first 2 days of what's expected of you and how to act. And, you know, you're always going for a championship no matter what. So it's a pretty special thing to be around.
Do you reckon, you've played in other teams, so you know the situation. You played with the Wildcats as well, but do you think the Cats, how do they feel about being written off, I guess, all the time? It seems like every season they're like, oh, the Cats won't make the finals this year, or they're not very popular amongst the rest of the league. What do you think?
It's a bit laughable when you're playing for the Cats and you understand the culture and how successful we have been, that people continue to say that. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's people's opinions. They have no idea what goes on behind closed doors. They're just looking at a piece of paper and assuming that a team's going to play a certain way, but actually not knowing what the chemistry's like and what the culture is. But, you know, all I've got to say is that, like I said before, we're here to win a championship. We're here to do our best. And we'll continue to do that night in, night out.
Well, it's great to have you back with the Wildcats, Tom. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on Sports Day.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Jervis there, a big man for the Perth Wildcats, back on their roster, and he'll be aiming for a fourth championship with the Cats. Isn't that quite crazy? 92211 882 is the phone number. You're listening to Sports. Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day. Adam Papalia, Glenn Jakovich with you. And Jack, I know you've been looking forward to this next interview literally all week. I haven't been able to shut you up talking about the NFL. Off air pretty much all week as we get into an NFL update. The Sporting Globe Super Bowl Watch Party. Make sure you get involved. And Ben Graham, of course, a man who we knew as a star of the AFL, but is a star of the NFL.
Kick a ball.
As well, certainly could. The first Aussie, of course, to play in a Super Bowl with the Cardinals. He joined us on the line now. Ben Graham, thanks so much for your time.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me. Just great to be talking the NFL at this time of the year. Playoffs are in full swing.
Ben, it's an exciting time that starts this weekend with the divisional finals. You've got a couple of new participants. The Cleveland Browns take on the reigning premiers, Kansas City Chiefs. Can we expect a boil over here?
Well, we'll firstly touch on the Browns. What a fantastic year.
Great story.
They've had in a year where the NFL continues to find a way to plough on, to plough through. But the Browns, probably more than anyone else, have been affected by this pandemic. They didn't have coaches on the sideline last week. They've had entire wide receiver core out with COVID, bringing people in off the street. I mean, the Denver Broncos lost their quarterbacks 1 week. The Baltimore Ravens, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they've all been affected in some way, shape or form. But the Browns most recently, they have been affected. But they've won their first playoff game. The Cleveland fans must be doing backflips because they've finally got a team they can root for. Baker Mayfield's doing a great job at quarterback, and Nick Chubb is one of the better running backs in the NFL. But, you know, it doesn't come any sweeter for the Browns. They beat the Steelers in Week 17 to get into the playoffs, and then they beat them again in Pittsburgh in the wild card round. But given how tough the NFL can be, they face the Kansas City Chiefs, reigning Super Bowl champions, who've just come off the bye, given they were the number one seed. So, look, I'm not tipping an upset, but the Chiefs haven't been firing on all cylinders the last couple of months. Yes, they've won, and Patrick Mahomes is a freak of a quarterback and win. I think it'll be close, but I think the Chiefs can win this one, guys, and firm as Super Bowl favourites.
All right, what about on the last game on... Well, Monday night here, but it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the GOAT, Tom Brady, up against, well, he's won a Super Bowl, Drew Brees with the New Orleans Saints. This is going to be one heck of a game.
Oh, it certainly is. And, you know, I know people talk about Brady versus Brees. They don't actually take the field at the same time. But here we're going to have an example of two Hall of Fame quarterbacks that command their offense to see basically who can put up the highest score. We know they're both very savvy. Yes, they're both getting old. They're 85 years of age combined. But we know what superstars they are, and we don't know how long they've got left. So we know they're leaving it all out there. But the Saints, they've played the Buccaneers twice already this year and beaten them comprehensively. The last time they played was 38-3. So I think the Saints, with Alvin Kamara, he's only 3 weeks removed from that 6-touchdown performance. Michael Thomas, the wide receiver, is back, caught his first touchdown of the year last week. I think the Saints will be too strong. I think they'll advance to the NFC Conference Championship game against the Packers, who I think will beat the Rams. The Rams upset the Seahawks last week in the wild card, but they've got a few injuries, and I expect the Packers to win that one.
Ben,
in the other game we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, well, this is the Cinderella story. The Buffalo Bills, who, well, in the 90s, for all our listeners, they lost four Super Bowl games in a row, 4 years in a row. But they're up against the Baltimore Ravens. I like Lamar Jackson. I thought he proved a few people wrong last week. He had a big playoff win against the Titans, and he was the MVP last year. He's a scary proposition. I'm liking the Ravens at the minute.
Yeah, well, this is the most favourite game I'm looking forward to this weekend. Yes, the Bills, they flew under the radar for the first half of the season, but gradually momentum started to build and people started to really take notice of them. And Josh Allen will be a star of the future, but he's performing exceptionally well right now. And they're coming to the playoffs as the most informed team. And they rolled the Indianapolis Colts last week in the wild card weekend, but this is a far tougher matchup. Lamar Jackson, as you said, he's exciting as they come, reigning MVP. They lost four games in a row mid-season and people started to write them off, but then they won the last five games of the season to get into the playoffs. They beat the Titans last week and their run defense kept Derrick Henry to 40 yards. Now, Derrick Henry's the best running back in the NFL by far. But Lamar Jackson, it's expected to be a snowy kind of weather game in Buffalo on Sunday our time. But this goes into the favour of Baltimore Ravens and their run game. And I'm tipping an upset like you. Love what Lamar Jackson does and think the Baltimore Ravens can upset the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. But that doesn't, by any means, I mean, the Buffalo have had a fantastic season, 13-3. They've got a lot to look forward to, but I just think they're going to get Baltimore at the wrong time.
Great to chat, Ben. The Packers and the Rams from 8:35 a.m. Sunday, then the Bills and the Ravens from 12:15, and then Monday morning, the Chiefs and the Browns from 7 o'clock and the Saints and the Buccaneers from 10:40 a.m. So perfect time on those two mornings to just sit back and watch a bit of NFL. Ben, before we let you go, just given you have played across both codes, the wild card weekend that we saw last week.
Stop it.
Could you see that, or do you think it would be a good idea in the AFL as well?
Well, you've got to remember the wild card weekend has always been there, so it's nothing new in the NFL. The difference this year, though, is they expanded it out to give more teams an opportunity to play playoffs. So seven teams in each conference, giving the number one seed the week off, where traditionally only six teams make it, with the top two seeds having the week off. I like this formula where there are seven teams, more teams get an opportunity. It goes right down to the wire. We know every game means something, but only one team gets the bye. And what we saw, say, with the Steelers is they rested a lot of their starters, which I don't like, but understand when they don't get a first-round playoff bye. Look, I'm not an advocate for the AFL to do everything that the NFL does, but I like the wild card weekend, because the teams that are in the mix for some of the year but then out of the playoffs or finals towards the end of the year, it gives them something to play for the last month of the season. So I think that it's worth a look. I think that based on the numbers, there's probably too many teams in the finals as it is. So if you kept it as it is but added a wild card weekend, I think it would work well.
Hey, Ben, just finally, just a quick one. As a long-suffering fan, give me some hope for next year for the Dallas Cowboys. Is Jerry Jones on the right path and we get Dak Prescott back?
Well, look, they are one of the disappointments season. I actually picked them to win the NFC East and push for the NFC Conference championship game. Look, when you lose your star quarterback, Ezekiel Elliott's been under par. They're defense has been deplorable, can't make a tackle. Not Jerry Jones's fault, but he does own that franchise differently to any other franchise. I think they'll be okay. They play in the worst division in football, the NFC East, but they've got the bones. They just need them healthy, make a couple of moves, protect that Prescott. I think you'll win the NFC East next year.
Thank you.
He's happy now. Great stuff, Ben. Thanks so much for having a chat, mate. We're looking forward to all the action across the weekend.
Yeah, me too. Right on, guys.
Thanks,
we'll
Ben.
Talk next week.
Ben Graham there talking all things of the NFL divisional playoffs. Just getting out of your way there, Jacko, because you are full bottle on. You love it.
I love my NFL, mate.
Absolutely
love it. Best time of the year with the NFL playoffs.
NFL update there with Ben Graham. Thanks to the Sporting Globe. The Sporting Globe Super Bowl watch party. You can book now. Belmont, Mandurah and Rockingham. SportingGlobe.com. Well, thanks for your company on Sports Day this evening, Jacko. Been another big week. It's been a big couple of weeks, actually, mate. Thanks for joining me in the chair.
Thanks, Adam. Thoroughly enjoyed working with you the last 2 weeks. It's been fantastic. I'll be back next week with Goss, but go the Aussies tomorrow, and they need to post a big score, 400, and they win the fourth test.
Tim Gossage will be part of the show next week. I'll join him on Monday. Jack will be in the chair a little bit later on in the week as we continue this great start to 2021. Thanks so much for your company. Of course, after 8 o'clock, Todd Johnston will be right here with the night shift.